Good morning. This is, as you've already heard, the first Sunday of Advent. Advent being that four-Sunday period of time in the church calendar leading up to Christmas Day in our celebration of the coming of Christ. When we talk about Advent, the word Advent really is just Latin. It means the coming or the appearing. So we talk about the coming or the appearing of Jesus. Principally, we think about it as in terms of his first coming, when he comes to be born as a child in a manger. But there's also undertones, undercurrents of thinking of his coming a second time, when he comes as judge and Lord. And so traditionally, the churches use particular readings and hymns and sermon topics and themes to help us all sort of focus and channel our minds and our hearts in this appreciation and wonder at the coming of God, who steps into human affairs to save people and then again to come as judge and Lord. Traditionally, the first Sunday of Advent is when we think about the darkness in the world, the lost estate prior to Jesus' first coming. And as Dan mentioned last week, the darkness and despair that will characterize people and humanity just before Jesus' second coming. So it's not the nicest message, but it's an important message. And so that's what we're going to dig into today. But first, let me start by referring back to a message a few months ago. I was privileged to preach on that Sunday, and I preached on Scripture, but I drew heavenly from Fantastic Mr. Fox, which is an animated movie. And you remember the sort of the theme or the thing you walked away with from that message was this realization that at different stages of life, we go through different transitions. We wrestle with different issues. We try to resolve different things. And everybody's working on something. It just depends on their stage of life. And if you looked across the congregation and there was an 8-year-old child that day, well, he or she, they're working on some issue. Some issue that helps them understand who they are and how they relate to others in the world and how they relate to God. But what that person's wrestling with is different from what the teenager across the congregation is wrestling with, or the young adult or middle adult or senior adult. We're all wrestling with something, but it's not all the same. Therefore, we have to be nurturing and fostering and encouraging of each other, because, as Philo of Alexandria said, we're all fighting a great battle. The battle might be different, but we're all fighting one. Well, I want to contrast that message with something today completely opposite, and I want to tell you, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that each of us here, regardless of our age, wrestles with the same thing. Doesn't matter if we're a child or a teenager or a senior, we all wrestle with the same thing. Same things throughout our lives. They're issues that we never really solve them. We just wrestle with them all our life. And that's been the case throughout all human history. We wrestle with the same things that our ancestors did 300 years ago, or 1,000 years ago, or 3,000 years ago. We wrestle with the same things in life that they did. We just haven't changed. Human nature is what it is. The human condition is what it is. I read a book some time ago about the building of cathedrals in the Middle Ages up through the Renaissance. You know, these glorious structures that took decades or centuries to build, and the wealth of kingdoms and of empires, and that were legacies of human accomplishment and building prowess and testimonies to adoration of God, and that were largely built with enforced labor, slave labor, and in which a lot of people died in the construction. But I think about those things, let's say like a Notre Dame in Paris. I think about that, and I'm reading, and I'm wondering, why in the world don't we do stuff like this anymore? Why aren't we building cathedrals today? Is it because we're different? Does it not matter to us that we adore God with these wonderful edifices, or we want to leave a lasting legacy of our ability? And I realize it's not a matter of would, it's a matter of could. I mean, if we could, we would do that, because we're the same. It's just so hard nowadays to harness the wealth of an entire nation, an entire kingdom, and take decades or a century to build something, and it's really hard to find good slave labor. Although I shouldn't joke, because it exists, unfortunately, in parts of the world. And today we have OSHA, and the Occupational Safety and Health Administration does not stand by while people fall off scaffolds and boulders fall on them and stuff. We could, we would if we could, because we are the same. We are the same as those people who lived 400, 500, 600 years ago. And that's a wonderful thing. We have the same joy in our hearts. The flip side of that is a bad side. I was reading more recently Night by Elie Wiesel, who was a concentration camp survivor, barely. His dad, his father, who he was with in concentration camp, died. And as I'm reading this book, I'm thinking, this is so alien. This is so out of this world that people could do this to each other. And then I'm thinking, it's only, that's like 60 or 70 years ago. And yet, on the other hand, it seems like this cannot be happening in my lifetime or the lifetime of my parents. But it did. And it does. It happens today. It's happening around the world today, where genocide is occurring. It's just not as publicized, but it's happening. Just like it happened, the evils of the Inquisition, Genghis Khan, Attila the Hun, the conquistadors in Latin America, the slaughter of people, the creation of genocide is in our hearts today. It can as easily happen today, and it is happening today. It could happen in this country. It could absolutely happen in this country. Given the right circumstances, the right situation, it'll happen. It's because that same evil lurks in our hearts, and it's why we have to be ever diligent that we don't scapegoat and we don't broad brush and we don't blame people for the ills we see in society. We don't project onto them some evil we've experienced and project it on a whole race of people, whole group of people. The evils that happened 2,000 years B.C. happen today because we are the same. We're all the same. All over the world we're the same. Across the ages, since the beginning of humanity, we are the same. We find joy in the same things, importance in the same things. We wrestle with the same fears. We have the same dreams. We experience the same anger and the frustration and the despair, because we are the same. The words of the Bible were absolutely true when they were spoken or written. But they also feel absolutely appropriate coming out of our mouths today, because we are the same. You know, the Apostle Paul wrote to the church in Corinth in 1 Corinthians 10. He's speaking specifically about temptation. And he says, you know, there's no temptation you're experiencing that isn't common to mankind. Church of Corinth, there's nothing unique going on there. And he could have generalized that. I will generalize it for you. He could have said, Church of Corinth, there is no frustration you experience. There is no joy you experience. There are no dreams you have. There is no anger you feel in your heart that isn't common to mankind. Because we're all the same. Across people, across cultures, across time. And that sense of darkness and desperate waiting that we heard in the readings this morning from Psalms and Habakkuk and Zechariah, those feelings typified, I mean, they were the general feeling of people as they're waiting for the appearance of the Messiah, the appearance of the Christ, his first coming. And they're the same feelings of despair and anger and frustration that will typify the people prior to Christ's second coming. And it's something, they're feelings that we all wrestle with now, each of us here. We wrestle with those same things. It's part of the human condition. It's part of human nature. And I think sometimes, I appreciated the dramatization this morning, because I think sometimes when we read those words, we strip them of the human emotion that lies beneath them. You know, as humans today, across time, we question where God is in the midst of all the sorrow in the world, the war and the famine and the disease and the evil. As individuals, we cry out for him to come alongside us and comfort us in our troubles. Deliver us from our enemies and our tribulations. Again, this is part of the human condition. It's part of human nature. And though an occasional person may say, no, they never feel those things, I do not believe them, ever. I cannot picture it. Have you ever met anybody who's told you they've never lied in their life? I've met a couple, I'm not kidding you. They say, no, I have never lied. Oy vey. That's a lie right there from the beginning. I mean, I just can't picture that's true. And that's one of the reasons why Scripture, the reading of Scripture today, is so valuable to us, because it accurately represents the triumphs and the trials of great saints through the ages who have gone before us. It's brutally honest. Scripture does not pull any punches, and we have to be careful that we don't sanitize it. These people wrestled with the same things that you and I wrestle with. The psalmist's words are my words and your words and the words of every person who's ever lived. How long, Lord? How long are my enemies going to get the better of me and rejoice over my destruction? How long are you going to look on without doing anything? When will you rescue me from their attacks? When will you deliver my life as you promised? You are not doing as you said you do. Are you angry at me? At us? Have we not given you the reverence and respect that you require? How long, Lord? Are you going to be angry forever? Is your jealousy burning like fire and your anger smoldering so that you won't even listen to us? You won't even hear our prayers. You hide yourself from us, and all we get is a sense of your indifference. How long will you continue like this? When will you show us your face? When will we know your presence? Like a small child, I cry in the darkness and you do not listen. You hear me, you see me. You know the stress that my soul is under. How long, Lord, how long will you refuse to answer? Do you choose to forget me and so you hide your face from me? I cry out time after time, but you do not hear. Or worse yet, you hear and you choose not to listen. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me? So far from my cries of anguish. Why do those words carry such emotion? There is no power of ink on paper to convey emotion. Those words are emotive for us. They conjure up emotion because they resonate with us. Because deep in our hearts, we have that fear and frustration. And when we read the psalmist, it connects with us because that's where we are. Not all the time, but that's where we are at times. The anger and the despair that we feel at times, it's the same thing that David felt. David's words are my words and your words. And when we read them or say them, we have an immediate connection with what he was feeling, with the big issues that have then and now and always will occupy all our minds. Those are our words. Are they sinful words? I guess they could be. It depends on how you say them. But by and large, I think they're just the cry of hearts that have hurt, been hurt, and are despairing, wrestling in confusion. I mean, how can we not have those thoughts when God seems to be so distant at times, when he seems not to hear us in our distress? When loved ones languish in illness and depression, when savings and homes are lost through bad economies and layoffs and medical bills, when sons and daughters die in war, and children starve to death every day around the world, when the beauty of creation is scarred to fuel human consumption in excess, and when people enslave other people as imprisoned sex workers or subjugated laborers, how can our hearts not cry out, God, where are you? Why don't you make this right? And I can't believe the cry of the last words I read could be sinful. My God, why have you forsaken me? Those are from Psalm 22, but those are the words that Jesus chose to cry out on the cross. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me, so far from my cries of anguish? In a mystery we can't fully fathom, understand, or describe, Jesus, the Son of God, who had had perfect relationship with God the Father from all eternity past, at that moment of time, again, in some way we don't fully understand, but he is made separate from his Father as he takes the sins of the world upon himself, God the Father looks away. And he cries out from the depth of his heart the same things that David cried out and the same things that we cry out. God, why have you forsaken us? Why are you so far from us right now? We're calling out to you, save us, but you don't even hear our cries of distress, our cries of anguish. I really wanted to do a sermon with a lot of jokes and illustrations and stuff, but you can't do it the first week of Advent. You gotta show people the darkness. I mean, the church has been very wise over the centuries to say, listen, just like a sick person needs to understand they're sick before they go to see a physician, and just like a person who's lost in the forest needs to realize they cannot find their way out on their own and they cry for help, so too we need to understand just the darkness of human existence and how we are waiting and crying out, hoping that God hears and that God will answer. Now, if this week, if this message were like the final curtain on the play, this would be very bad. But it's not the final say. It's not the last curtain. It's not even an act yet. This message is the setting of the stage. This is the backdrop for the weeks to come. And over the next 3 weeks leading up to Christmas, we're going to read and hear about how God did respond to those desperate cries and did respond to the desperate need of the world and how he will respond yet again at some point in the future and come as judge and as Lord. If this were the end of the story, what we're talking about this morning, then we would, of all people, be most wretched, because there is no happy ending. There's no resolution. But God, and the Bible's quite clear on this, God did answer 2,000 years ago in a miraculous and powerful way, and he's going to answer again at some point in the future, and because he hears the cries of humanity, of people through the ages, of people across the world. He promises to answer and to send his Son. But you know, he also promises to come to us as individuals too, when we cry out in distress, when we need him. I think if we were to go back and interview David, King David, who wrote quite a few of those Psalm passages, and we said, David, did you really say that? He would say, yeah, man, I absolutely did. It was bad. But I'm telling you, God answered. I mean, if we had the full story, we get the story that God answered David. But David, in his honesty, cried out the way he had to. Advent is not just about things occurring on the broad sweep of the world stage. It's about the coming of Christ to individual hearts as well. And we'll look at that more closely in the weeks to come as we move forward towards Christmas and we go through the traditional Advent flow of messages. But this morning, I encourage you, I encourage myself, to look at Advent this year on a smaller scale, on a smaller stage. And that's the stage of our lives. I encourage you to think and to meditate a little bit, contemplate about where we are, how lost we are, would be without God. And then walk through over the next few weeks, walk through the miracle of how God comes into human lives and has come into some of your lives and is maybe knocking at a door waiting to come into others. Remember, Advent just means the coming or the appearing. And we all have our individual, personal Advent tale to tell. So let's look at Advent as something that's unfolding now in our lives, even as we look back and celebrate a historic truth that happened 2,000 years ago. Oh, this feels really bad to end a sermon like this. I'm sorry. I need somebody to look at me and smile. God bless you, Mike. All right, please rise.